Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. In January 1968, an American naval intelligence ship was captured by North Korean forces in the Sea of Japan. Chloe Hajimatheo has been talking to one of its crew members.
The few tourists who visit North Korea each year are often invited to see an American military trawler, the Pueblo, which is moored along the Taedong River in Pyongyang. Guided tours are offered by officials keen to capitalise on the fact that their country still has the only US Navy ship currently being held captive. And a video plays to those on board, recounting events in a triumphant tone.
The brave seamen of our People's Army captured Pueblo, the armed spy ship of the US imperialist, which was conducting espionage in our territorial waters, and over 80 aggressors on board a ship.
It all started on January the 2nd, 1968, when a small trawler disguised as a scientific vessel set sail from Japan. In fact, the USS Pueblo was a spy ship, carrying high-tech communications equipment and a crew of more than 80, many of whom were experts in decoding the messages they hoped to intercept from the North Korean military. After 2 weeks of gathering intelligence, the crew, under the command of Pete Booker, suddenly realised they'd been spotted. At 24, Skip Schumacher was the young first lieutenant on board.
There was a North Korean patrol vessel that came out and clearly was paying attention to us. We would look at them through our binoculars and we could see that they were looking back at us through their binoculars. The following morning, around 12, a submarine chaser came out and circled us a couple of times. And then they were followed by three smaller torpedo boats. And we communicated with them via international flag signals. And they were saying, heave to, I will open fire. And we signaled back that we were conducting hydrographic examinations and tests and that we were in international waters. Then they hoisted up a flag that said, stand by for boarding. And we said, we're not going to let these people board. So we got underway and started heading out towards the Sea of Japan. And we ended up with the submarine chaser on one side and these three torpedo boats at high speed circling us.
Were you starting to get worried at this stage?
Yes, we were. We thought this was a little bit more harassment than we had anticipated. There was no warning shot across the bow. There was no gunfire to show us that they were serious. They just fired point blank at us, injured everyone, almost everyone who was up on the bridge at the time. Once that first shot had come into us, the smaller torpedo boats started to rake us with their 50 caliber machine guns.
Why didn't the Pueblo fire back?
We didn't have anything to fire with. The whole notion was that we were to be an unarmed trawler-like vessel.
Were you trained for a situation like this?
Basically, no. We were not. What we rapidly realized was that we did not have adequate equipment to destroy everything that we had on board. And we didn't have, modern paper shredders or any of that kind of stuff. And so what we would do is to grab a tin can or a barrel or something and fill it up with papers and set it on fire. The North Koreans saw and understood exactly what we were doing, and so wherever they saw smoke emerging from the ship, they would open fire. And in fact, it was when we were burning materials that they hit us with a 57-millimeter shell that killed one sailor outright and injured three others severely. Basically, after about 90 minutes, Commander Booker was faced with one dead sailor, three others who needed serious medical help, and about a third of his crew that had been injured with various shrapnel wounds.
Commander Booker decided he had no choice but to surrender. The crew of the Pueblo were taken ashore, transported to the capital, Pyongyang, and put in prison.
Their immediate focus was on Commander Booker. They grilled him extensively for about 36 hours, and what they wanted him to do was to admit that the ship had violated their territorial waters and that we were a spy ship, and apologize for it, so they wanted him to sign this confession. And Pete showed great courage and said, I'm not going to sign anything like that. And they beat him pretty severely. And then they brought him back, and he said, no, I'm not going to sign this confession. And so they whipped out a revolver, put it to his head, and said, that's it, we're going to kill you. And they clicked the revolver on an empty chamber and said, you're not worth wasting a bullet on. We're going to bring in your crew members one by one, starting with the youngest, and we'll put the revolver to their head. And so if you don't sign the confession, they're dead. And they brought the first one in, put the revolver to his head, and Pete said, okay, I'll sign your confession.
Each of the senior crew members was made to sign a similar admission of guilt. recorded and broadcast as triumphant justification for their capture by the North Korean government. Skip's confession was one of them.
What I have done against the government of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea and the Korean people is a criminal act that can never be tolerated. I humbly beg of you to forgive me my crime.
Back in the United States, the news of the Pueblo's capture was greeted with anger and dismay. Planning for a rescue mission to free the crew began immediately, but was soon aborted because there was no intelligence on where the men were being held. Back in Pyongyang, the men were being forced to write endless declarations of guilt when suddenly they hit upon an idea for resistance. They could use the North Koreans' propaganda against them by employing subtle signals that would show the outside world they were not beaten, while their captors remained none the wiser. These small actions helped keep the men's spirits up, but eventually they were found out.
One of the photographs of a room of eight sailors was taken and meant by the North Koreans to show how well the crew was being treated. And the photograph had, you know, every sailor holding up his middle finger in the photograph, and of course, finger gestures of derisive meaning that had universal worldwide understanding. That is to say, worldwide, except within North Korea. They did not know what it was, and so we told them the finger was a Hawaiian good luck sign. So they thought that was wonderful. And the photograph was subsequently published in Time magazine, who called attention to the fact that the crew was exhibiting a great deal of courage to resist the North Koreans by using these finger gestures. That particular issue of Time magazine got back to North Korea quite quickly, and in early December of 1968, it started a period known as Hell Week, which was an effort by the North Koreans to find out exactly what we had been doing for the 11 months that we had been there. And so they wanted to know all of the double ententes and the navalese and the slang language that we had used and so on and so forth. They beat us up very badly.
There must have been some point in those 11 months when you suspected that perhaps the negotiations weren't working. Did you ever think that you might be there forever?
Yes, and that was during Hell Week, when it finally sort of dawned on us that there was nothing to prevent the North Koreans from taking five of our crew members out of the parking lot and shooting them. It was a traumatic experience all the way around, not knowing what your fate is.
Just when the crew were at their lowest and doubting if they could go on, they were suddenly told they would be released. But they couldn't leave without one last act of defiance.
So here we were, we had just been through Hell Week, horrible. We had the crew in lousy shape, and they said, you know, it's one final activity. We'd like to have Commander Bruker write and record a thank you message. And Commander Bruker came up with the word P-A-E-A-N, which when you look it up in your Korean English dictionary, translates as to praise. And so the North Koreans thought that was wonderful. And as we actually walked out of North Korea across the Bridge of No Return at Panmunjom, blasted on the loudspeakers for all to hear, comes this booming voice of Commander Bruker in this tape that he had made, wishing to pee on the North Korean army, pee on the North Korean navy, and most of all, pee on Premier Kim Il-sung.
To pee on the Korean people's army, navy, and their government, and to beseech the Korean people to forgive our dastardly deeds.
Back in the U.S., Commander Steve Bruker faced a court of inquiry for his surrender to the North Koreans. A court-martial was recommended, but charges were never pressed. It was 1989 before he and the crew received medals in recognition of their ordeal.
Chloe Hadjimatheu. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.